A team with high hopes and high expectations deserve high-quality coverage.
Matthews with a shot, score! Marner, score! Wee Willie Nylander!
Good thing you've come to the right place. You're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Well, to much dismay of our pal Critter, and I'm surprised you didn't bring that up earlier when you were talking about Carlo, but Critter said, don't do it. But I'm sorry, Carlo. I got to do it because I believe in the Bills this weekend.
Wow.
I really, really do.
No.
I'm taking the dog. I'm taking the points. The Bills.
Al's brother. He's got the hottest seat at TSN 1050 this week. We're coming off a big win for the Leafs, 3-1. But we'll start it off like it's Bills brunch and not Leafs lunch. Do you want to defend yourself? Do you want to make a statement? Do you have a public apology to read? Anything? You know, I'm not a Bills fan. I'm a Vikings girl. I've been sad for years.
Yeah.
So there's nothing on this show that you could do to hurt my feelings. But do you have to share anything, AB?
There's not much that I can really say. I mean, that was just a treat to watch yesterday. Possibly the greatest football game of all time.
Oh, God, yeah.
And, yeah, I was like, when Gabriel Davis caught that touchdown to go ahead 29-26 with about a minute and a half left, I was just celebrating like no tomorrow. And then Tyreek Hill breaks off a massive score, gives the peace sign, and I was like, no. But Josh Allen got the football back to Gabe Davis again. He went this time only 13 seconds left in the game. That's got to be it, right? Wrong. Oh, I couldn't believe that they went on to lose that football game. And, yeah, I ended up having to go up onto First Up this morning to talk about it with Carlo, and then he sent me a text afterwards saying, you're dead to me. So I guess I apologize to Bills Mafia. I didn't think that my selection actually held that much weight when it comes to deciding who's going to win football games in the NFL, but apparently it is all my fault, and for that I guess I will issue an apology to Bills Mafia.
To be fair though, AB, more people are mad obviously at the NFL itself and their janky overtime rules than they are at you and your janky pick calling. I even called you out on the air on Friday night, on the CHL broadcast. Maybe I was part of the jinx too.
You did. And yeah, that is the big conversation today, is mainly the fact that Josh Allen didn't get to touch the football at all in the overtime period and ended up losing that game because his defense couldn't hold on, and the Chiefs went on and they went to go and score a touchdown, and that's it. Game over. First score wins if it's done by a touchdown. So it was just an overall, crap game, and the Bills to surrender a 3-point lead, to surrender that game with 13 seconds left on the clock was like, I guess to bring it back to the Leafs, they did something yesterday that the Leafs were able to do on Saturday, and that was hold on to a lead, right? They were up 3-1 on the island, 3-1. We know how daunting that score has been for Toronto for the past week, but they held on. Peter Mrazek, to me, best performance as a Maple Leaf, 27 save shutout. And to me, it was good to see them respond after kind of being called out by Sheldon Keefe Saturday night.
Totally, and he clarified those comments a little bit. He went out of his way before the game to say something to the effect of, I wasn't calling the team soft, I wasn't calling the team purposeless as a whole, but it was important to him that they got back to the tight, stingy defensive game that they were playing prior to that loss, and they responded. And was there a more fitting way for the Leafs to win than to have a 3-1 lead going into the third period and hold on to it? Like, I was sitting there so tense for the whole third period. It was 3-1. Of course it was 3-1. What else was it going to be, right?
Right. But then what happened? And this has kind of been the big thing is, you know, Jack Campbell's been tremendous this season. He really has been. But as of late, he hasn't been making that big stop. And that was something that Sheldon Keefe also noted in that game against the Rangers. When they're leading, you kind of need that big save. And I felt that Peter Mrazek actually gave us that this weekend. I think Peter Mrazek, especially look at the third period, the Leafs kind of outplayed in the third. They're outshot 15-4. And there was one stop specifically. To me, was almost the game. You know, it's not necessarily
TSN
like the
point.
TSN.
Use it. We don't use
it's
it.
It's not
enough.
A turning point. All right, let's call it the TSN turning point, because if that does go in, and it was the Parise on the rebound in tight, ends up taking a shot off the rebound, and then a nice glove stop by Peter Mrazek. If that puck goes in, it's 3-2 with about 11 or so minutes left in the third period. Now this is where things, you know, doubt starts to creep in the mind of the Maple Leafs
totally.
If that goes in. And with this team being a bit of a fragile team because of giving up those leads, that stop to me was almost the game-saving save. And that's the type of save you need to hold on to a lead. And Peter Mrazek was able to deliver in that game on Saturday night. I thought that he was great. His best performance as a Maple Leaf by far.
And that was the storyline going in, right? Like, what is... because. We're seeing Jack Campbell's numbers, and we talked about this a lot last week, kind of come back to earth, to a humanly place. And we'll talk to Mike Johnson about this in the next couple minutes when we have him on. And everybody's kind of holding their breath, like, Peter Mrazek really has to have a good game here, because it's not looking like Jack Campbell's going to play 78 games this season. It's just not feasible for him. We have to get back to the initial plan, in that this is supposed to be kind of a 1A, 1B tandem situation. And Sheldon Keefe said over the weekend, we need to get comfortable playing in front of him, talking about the Leafs. How, and yeah. It's kind of hard to play AB when you have a goalie behind you that you don't completely trust. It leads to a little bit of stress on the ice. It leads to maybe overthinking things, overcompensating so you don't make any errors. And I think Peter Mrazek might have earned a little bit of trust on Saturday night. And that was really important, I thought, for this team going forward.
Yeah, I hope so. And you talk about how jammed up the schedule is about to get in February. I mean, going into the year, the vision for the Maple Leafs was to have more of a tandem. And now that you see a big performance out of Mrazek like that, you do have a little bit more confidence now going into February, thinking, okay, maybe now we can lighten the load of Jack Campbell a little bit and still be able to pick up victories and think that this team can pick up those points. And maybe we'll see more of a tandem, a 60-40 split in the next month or so.
I know Mike Johnson is going to tell us to slow our roll and that it was only one game, but let's bring him in anyways. Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. MJ, we're going to start it off like this is Bills brunch and not Leafs lunch, because the city's buzzing about that game yesterday. Everybody's talking about the NFL overtime rules after the game last night, obviously, major storyline. This one's kind of off the cuff, MJ, but if you had the power to change any one rule in any sport, what would it be?
In any sports? That's a wide-ranging question. But
if
I'll
there's a hockey one,
I'll
stick
to hockey. Yeah. If you score on the power play, you get to keep the power play. You got to get out of the box.
That's interesting.
2 minutes, he gets to 2 minutes, and he just doesn't come out. Same on 5-on-3s, as well as, now I'm going to get on a roll, I'm allowing hand passes in the offensive zone. I don't understand why we shade the rules. It's like, it's a subtle rule, but like, why do we let defensive players pass the puck with their hands, and then you're going to penalize offensive players? It makes no sense to me. So I'm allowing hand passes all over the ice.
I actually like that one. That's not something that I've heard come up quite a lot, but like that's
skill.
Well, it does, but I mean, it's realistically sometimes you're just kind of batting it down. It's not like you're grabbing the puck and throwing it over a player, over somebody's stick. Like, it's often just a quick bat down and away you go. It's no different than kind of knocking
it
down with your stick.
You know why you have to do it? Because the defense is holding your stick in his hand. Like, he's committing an infraction against you. He's like, yeah, if I want to pat it to my partner or whatever. And then you call a penalty if I put my hand on it and like toss it 15 feet in the air. Sure. But let me play the puck with my hand the same way you're allowed to in the defensive zone. I don't know why we wouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting one. One that I've also kind of have been getting on board with is in 3-on-3 overtime, not if you go back over the blue line, if you try and retreat and kind of circle back, losing possession.
Blue line
of the
becomes
puck.
The red line. Yeah.
Well, it's just kind of like
if you took the blue line out, right? And like once you're inside the blue line, then you could retreat to the red line and have some guy hanging out by the front of the net. Like offer up more space. You wouldn't have to clear the zone once the one guy goes over top. There's a lot of little nuances there, but I will say this, and I got to tell you, like everybody, I'm buzzing still about the football games yesterday.
Yeah.
Just stop them. Like, you know, oh, it's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not like, what, like,
it's true.
There is a defense, right? You just got to hold them.
What's that?
Not a touchdown. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah. Well, Josh Allen's really the only one in the world that's come out and said, realistically, you know, he said, well, that's the rule. If we would have gone out, won the toss, and scored, we'd be celebrating too. So, you know, he took that loss as well. He's not complained about the OT rules.
Interesting thought from a listener, AB, before we keep going. Should not be allowed to ice it on the penalty kill. Interesting.
See,
one.
I like that, but you know what that just will do, though? It will just slow the game down because they'll ice it anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So like, let's say you ice it, you can't change. When you're killing a penalty and you're under duress, you don't care. They're going to be back in your own end anyways. So I like
gas,
the sentiment.
Right?
But you're just like, whatever, I'll ice it. We'll just take a face-off. It's all good. Like, in fact, you'd probably rather have a face-off and a chance to, you know, flip it out or whatever. So I like the idea, but I think that would just involve so many more whistles while killing penalties, which is kind of counterintuitive.
Why don't we throw that out onto the Twitter sphere, producer Steph? If there's a rule, if there's a rule in the NHL that you would like to see change, what would it be? And we can kind of bring out these responses throughout the duration of the show. In conversation with TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson, getting back to hockey, I guess. You know, the Leafs come out with a victory. They're able to hold on to that 3-1 lead, which has been a very daunting task as of late, but. Did you like the Leafs' response Saturday night after kind of being called soft and being called out by Sheldon Keefe on Wednesday?
Yes, of course I did. I mean, they played really well. Mrazek was solid in net. Campbell a night off. They score when they have to. They find a way to win a kind of low-event-controlled game, something that Sheldon Keefe was probably looking for them. But I'm not surprised. Like, they're a good team. This is what they would do. I wasn't panicked when they gave up some leads. I'm not, you know, overjoyed that they did not. Like, they're a good team. More often than not, they'll be able to get that game over the finish line. So, yes, it was a good response. And maybe the biggest development of it is if Mrazek's healthy and can work his way into Sheldon Keefe's confidence books to get the 60-40 split you were talking about earlier, AB, like, I think that's what they want to do the rest of the way. That is probably the biggest development about that game.
Yeah.
A couple other thoughts. One, what did Carolina do? Carolina's, I think, the best team in the league. What did they do on the weekend? They gave up a 2-goal lead in the third period. Like, it happens to everybody.
Nobody talks about it.
Nobody's
it's just because
about
me
Carolina.
And AB
well,
are here talking all
right.
day about the Leafs and their league.
To be fair, it happens. When it happens once, you don't really talk about it. But when it happens four times in a 5-game span, then it's worth talking about. That's
fair
kind of
enough,
the difference there.
Yeah, but I'm saying it does happen all around. And also, did you see Sheldon Keefe kind of walk back?
Yes.
The soft comments. And so the analogy I offered up was like, it's like when you're chastising your kid and you can say, that was a dumb thing to do, which is very different than saying you're dumb. Like, you can say that we played a soft game in front of our own net, which is very different than we are a soft team and purposeless team. And I think Sheldon Keefe was making that distinction after the initial comment. He's like, listen, you know, I still believe in our team. We have to be better and harder in front of our own net. All things which are absolutely true, but very different than we are a soft and purposeless team, not game or moment or situation, but team. And so I think he was softening its impact because I don't think he really believes that. It'd be bad if he did, and I don't think he should. But that, I did notice that, like, the interpretation, I think what he was trying to say was more specific to the game against the Rangers as opposed to an indictment of the entire team, and he kind of cleared that up a couple days later.
That's the way that I took it, though. Like, I didn't see it as a macro issue. I don't think he saw the team as soft. That's not how I took it. I did kind of look at it as a micro view, those comments, and figured that was about that game because, you know, traditionally they've been a pretty good, hard team to play against. But against that team, the forecheck really got in on them. Sandin, Liljegren, they really kind of got exposed in a bigger pair. Dermott especially also was kind of giving up a lot when he got pressured. But I thought that, right, so I thought that it was more so that game specifically. So I kind of knew, I didn't have that big of an issue with those comments.
So you were the one
but
who got it right and everyone else got it wrong.
I guess so, apparently that's the case.
Cleared.
But when you look when you look at the game on Saturday, what did you make of the young guys who struggled a lot in that at those added minutes, you could say, against the Rangers, and then how did they kind of bounce back against the Islanders to you?
Well, I mean, I guess a little bit cleaner. I mean, the goals it's amazing what goals against will do, though. Like, Mrazek stopped some pucks that maybe Campbell didn't stop the night before, so it looks a lot better. But I think they're a little bit cleaner. But I find, I think the die is cast for those young defensemen. I think, like, while they are great in their limited role, I think Sandin and Liljegren have absolutely crushed third pair responsibilities. You know, extended minutes against better players, you know, they do have the odd mistake. They do so many good things, but the odd big mistake does creep in their game. And, you know, maybe a bit of a cleaner game against the Islanders doesn't change that fact or change my opinion that will be the case. Now, I wonder, AB, if they don't have, when's the deadline? March 19th or something like that, the trade deadline?
21st, like, I think.
21st, okay. So, like, don't they have, like, a two-month window here to prove how reliable they can be? Like, how aggressive does Kyle Dubas have to be with regards to getting more defensemen? Or can he, if everyone's healthy, feel pretty good about the 7-8 guys that they have in their rotation? And I think that's why Kyle is not going to overreact now. He's going to, like, listen, we got to figure out what we have here. Like, how good can these guys be now? And how good can they be in the future? But now it's probably the more pressing question. And we're not going to overreact to a couple bad games. We're not going to overreact to our coach getting angsty after a game. But we're just going to give him a couple months, give him a run here. Who knows how long Jake Muzzin will be out for? Hopefully not too long, but you never can tell. And just let them try to sort it out and see what they've got. I think there will be patience there because they want a longer evaluation in that enhanced role for all those guys, for Dermott, for Sandin, for Liljegren, for all of them.
We've got our TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson on the phone. An update for listeners from Leafs practice. You brought up Jake Muzzin there. Muzzin is on the ice. He's wearing a red no-contact jersey. That'll be the first time that he's been on the ice since his concussion. Yeah.
I'm curious. Like we haven't talked about this very much this year, right? But the game when Muzzin was hurt.
Right.
So he got hit behind the net. He skated to the corner with his hands on his head. Then got the puck and threw it to, like, the weirdest place of all time. And then they scored a goal against him. And then he was not taken out by a concussion spotter.
Right.
And then
I was
a day later,
he
got a concussion. And I'm like, where? Like, we don't have this conversation very often anymore. We did maybe when the concussion spotter was a newer thing. But, like,
right.
I was having a text exchange with one of my buddies. I'm like, if there was ever an obvious concussion spotter moment, that would have been it. No? On the original,
no,
wasn't hit. He's skating away with his hands in his head and then throws the puck and it completely, you know, plays with no sense whatsoever, and he never was taken from the lineup. I remember thinking that night, I'm like, that's not good. Like, that's the time when you're supposed to take guys out of the game to check.
Yeah, and he had a really tough night from then on.
Yeah, well, understandably, he had a concussion.
Totally,
right.
Totally, right? Yeah.
Was in the right mindset. That doesn't really get talked about nearly enough anymore. You're totally correct. But without Jake Muzzin, a guy who has kind of they've really relied on was Morgan Rielly, you know, and Morgan Riley's really starting to pick up his game. Really, it's been all season since he signed that deal. He's been unreal. He's on pace for 71 points this year. But stepping up, what improvements have you seen from Morgan Rielly this year for kind of the breakout season he's having, you know, as he kind of creeps up to that 30-year mark? Like, he's still progressing year after year, it seems. And this season, it's all kind of getting put together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he had a great year a couple of years ago offensively. And I think what he's done is he has evolved in his game where, was it a couple of years ago, he had 70 points and 20-something goals. And he was very much all offense and, like, you know, not great defensively. But he was so good offensively, like, on balance, he was very much a positive player. And he used his legs a lot to generate that offense. I think you saw him really leading the rush, joining the rush, jumping on the attack a couple of years ago. And I think this year what he's done is he's just kind of settled it down where, you know, his offensive impacts this year, well, even though he's piling up points, are not as good as they were a couple of years ago. But his defensive metrics are much stronger. And so I think he's just kind of, like, calmed down his defensive game, allowed himself to pass the puck and use his teammates more effectively, and that has let him, you know, kind of play tons of minutes, be quite consistent, improve the defensive side of the game. Even if the offense metrics are down a little bit, they're still very solid. And then he's doing well in the power play as well, so he's picking up points there. So it's almost like as a guy matures in his age and his game changes a little bit, and he's very much under control of who he is and what he's trying to do, and you have to, and they need him to be. I mean, they've needed him to play, especially with Muzzin out. They need 25 minutes from Morgan Rielly. They need first pair responsibility from Brody and Riley, and he's giving it to them.
Seriously, for all the things Kyle Dubas has to worry about this year, God bless Morgan Riley. Just holding it down back there. TJ Brody, too. MJ, Keith Yandel, we'll start going around the league a little bit here, is going for history tonight. He could tie Doug Jarvis for the Ironman streak in the NHL. We were talking about this morning. Impressive feat. Keith Yandel, everybody knows he's just like a weapon of a guy. How impressive is it to do this during the whole COVID pandemic? Like, this guy's just insane.
Well, that's a running joke at this point. The last month, he's like no longer testing. Like, we're not going to let
him.
We're not going to let him get pulled because of COVID. I think the most games I ever played was maybe like 180 in a row or something like that. And it's just, so like on a practical level, regardless of COVID, it is amazing to play that many minutes, that many games, never getting the flu, never getting a shot that breaks a bone in your foot, never pulling your groin where you can't see, never your back tightening up, or having those things happen and then just playing through it and being, you know, being able to manage your body that well. It's incredible, and it should be celebrated. It probably hasn't been this year enough because the Flyers have been terrible. And I think because Phil Kessel's right behind him as well, and Phil Kessel might end up having the record when it's all said and done anyways. But as beloved a teammate as you can find, like across the league, anyone who knows Keith Yandel, has played with Keith Yandel, has been around him, knows that he is one of the best people in the game. Like, guys just love having him as a teammate. So congratulations to him. And the fact, like, and I didn't want to put it out there in the world. Like, I didn't want to put that juju out there, but like, you know, coming up the last month, and there's absolutely nothing stopping him from catching COVID and having this end. Like, it's been 13 years in the making, and he just, you know, for whatever reason, some random reason, it's bouncing around their team. He was able to avoid it. So good for him. And it's good tonight, the tie-in game. Tomorrow night, the breaking game. So let's get it over with quickly, back-to-back. And to think how many times it was probably pretty close to ending, including last year where he was supposed to get scratched.
Right,
by the Panthers. Like, he was told, you're not playing, and it was his teammates, going back to what a teammate he is, it was his teammates who went to the coach, Joel Quenneville, then said, nope, we're not having it. This guy, he's not ending it this way. We're not scratching him game one. No chance. He's playing. He scored a goal that game, went out, played every game the rest of the year. But, I mean, he probably had several moments throughout this run that it was close to ending, and hopefully I'll culminate for him tonight, tomorrow night. It's incredible stuff. It's a league record. Not many of those kicking around.
Yeah, full Rudy Rudiger, just going into the coach's room, being like, no, that's not happening. Putting the jerseys on the ground.
Lay down the jerseys. Oh, yeah.
Lay down the jerseys. No, Yandel's playing that game.
Me up every time, still.
Oh, love it. Absolutely love it. One of the great, great movies of all time. All right, MJ, we're going to have to leave it there. But great chat as always. We'll chat again next week.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
Take it out. Take it easy. There he goes. MJ, Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. Really, we gotta talk about this before we go to break. We have Kristen Shilton joining us on the other side, but it's a tough conversation to have. It always is, but there was an incident in the ECHL this weekend where Jacob Panatta was suspended indefinitely by the ECHL and released by the Jacksonville Icemen after making a racial gesture toward Jordan Subban. We actually have audio from P.K. Subban in his kind of response to exactly what happened. And then, you know, we kind of discuss it afterwards. But, Chris, why don't we play that sound from P.K. Subban, the brother of Jordan Subban, who was the victim of a racist gesture over the weekend.
It's distasteful. There's no room for it in our game. And I think that's – I'm embarrassed. You know, I'm embarrassed because our game is better than this. And, you know, what I think about is all the great people and the great things about our game that I love. But, you know, the unfortunate thing isn't just the incident. The unfortunate thing is how many kids deal with this every day and it doesn't come to light.
And that's the biggest thing that we had Matt Dumba on not too long ago and spoke to this. I was... It's right at the grassroots, AB, because every time you talk to someone from the Hockey Diversity Alliance, or PK Subban said it right there, it's all for the next generation. Kids shouldn't have to grow up and want to just play hockey and have fun and have to deal with people being racist towards them when they're just trying to play a hockey game. Like, we hear countless things from the grassroots level. Rick Westhead released a whole report on the CHL over the weekend about incidents in that league. There was an incident in the AHL in which a player was suspended. This egregious incident in the ECHL, and all of those leagues feed to the NHL. Like, I was at my cousin's house this weekend, or at my boyfriend's cousin's house this weekend, and she was talking about, like, what Wayne Simmonds said earlier in the season. Wayne Simmonds is an NHL hockey player, and he said he's not sure about putting his kids in hockey just because of what he dealt with as he moved up the ranks and what he still deals with now that he's a long-time established NHL player.
Toxic culture, the toxic culture around hockey, and it does start from the grassroots level, you know? Like, that's what they're always talking about, how they want to do that, because it's not, like, it needs to be learned at a young age, and it's unfortunate that, like, this stuff is still happening, but it is. And it's a reminder that, you know, there is so much hate and racism still out there in the world, and it needs to be kind of a grassroots, ground-up type of situation to try and rid this out. You need, you know, kids like Jacob Panada. I mean, he needs to be taught at a very young age that there's zero tolerance for anything like that, and it's got to be taught from 4, 5, 6 years old, ideally from, you know, straight up in the womb. But it's just, seriously, hopefully if you keep talking about it, bring these tough
discussions
to light. He was released.
Like, it has to be that harsh of a discipline.
Yeah, and as he should be. As he
totally.
Absolutely should be.
There's no
be.
Space like, for it anymore.
Goodbye. Like, I'm no one's going to shed a tear for him, but no. Hopefully you always say you want to learn from stuff like this. But things, you know, these acts keep happening, and
this one just makes you feel sick to your stomach. Like,
it does.
Really,
it does.
It's just gross. It's just gross,
yeah,
and
it is.
It has to stop.
It really, really, really does. Okay. So we've got Kristen Shilton coming up, ESPN NHL reporter. We got some updates from practice. We'll get to that when we return. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Jude DeSherry. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. I need you to
hold. Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com for more. Julia DeSherry, Al's brother Mike DiStefano, with you on Leafs Lunch. So many updates from Maple Leafs practice. Ooh. But let's bring in ESPN NHL reporter Kristen Shilton to break them all down. Kristen, how's it going? Welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me. How are you guys doing today?
We're good. We're doing great.
It's Monday.
Doing great. Coming off
a
Leafs win.
Monday.
Yeah,
another
coming
Leafs
off a Leafs victory. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I think where we have to start might be what's going down at practice today. I kind of teed it up going into the break, and there is an absolute blunder being taken out at the facility right now. And for those who have missed it, I'll just explain what's going on with the line. So it looks like Bunting, Matthews, and Kashe is line one. Mikheyev, Tavares, Marner line two. Kerfoot, Kamp, and Nylander as the third line. Engvall, Spezza, and Simmonds as the fourth line. Kristen, like I said, this is unexpected to see this big of a shuffle in the lineup. I thought maybe the second line to get Tavares going, but the entire lineup being kind of shaken in a hat, and here we go. Just what are your initial thoughts about what's going on at practice today and these new look lines for the Leafs?
Well, I think that what we know is that William Nylander has been probably the Leafs' most consistent, productive forward of late. And if he's on a line with David Kamp, who has one goal in his last 9 games, and Alex Kerfoot, who has 2 goals since December started, you're probably looking at a situation where Sheldon Keefe is trying to get these guys going who aren't producing by putting a guy who is really on his game with them. You're trying to light a spark. You're trying to get something going with that third line. Because you can see, you know, you look at Matthews and Bunting, they've been playing really well. Mikheyev's been producing. Tavares could use a little boost. That's why you've got Marner there. You know they've played well together in the past. Kasha's coming back from his COVID absence, so he's going to need, you know, you don't want to put him back on a third line that's struggling, right? Because that's just not going to help anybody really get their legs going and get some confidence. So when I look at those top 3 lines, and you just know that Sheldon Keefe, he'll speak later, and I imagine that he'll be saying something along the lines of, look, we need to get more production out of our depth players. We can't just be relying on the top guys to score, because you see what happens. Look, you know, that Rangers game, when it sort of peters out from your top two lines, there's not a whole lot there happening that the Leafs need to support them. So I just think this is an example of, hey, you know, Keith going to Nylander and saying, this is not a demotion by any means. This is just, we need you to go and help make these guys better right now. And that's obviously something that, you know, the Leafs are really going to need to be able to compete in the second half, is better depth scoring.
Do you think there's an angle to this, Kristen, that's trying to get that second line going a little bit too?
Well, I think with Tavares, I mean, obviously he had a great start and things are going really well for him. And it's just, hasn't felt of late like he's really been able to have that impact offensively. I think his defensive game has been strong, but it's just, he doesn't have that same jump. He doesn't have that same sort of, you know, oomph in his play. And he's just, of course, he's generating chances, and that's what everyone will focus on. But in terms of actually putting pucks in the net, it just, he hasn't really had it. And I don't know if that's his line mates, if that's just been, you know, the natural course of a season. But you know that he and Marner have played very well together in the past. And so that's where I see that connection coming back. I think Mikheyev, the way that he's been able to really start to find a groove after all that time off, I think that that's strong on the left side. It's just Tavares just needs a bit more of a playmaker. He just, I think, needs somebody who can set him up, who can maybe help him get a couple greasy ones in, get the, you know, get the juices flowing, get the confidence going again. And that's where, you know, you look at what Tavares means, and the fact that Marner has the skill set that he does. We know how dynamic he can be as a playmaker. It just makes sense that you would put those two back together. And then Kasha, I think, will benefit from an opportunity there on the first line as well, like I said, with just balancing it out. There's just hasn't been a lot of balance, I think, to the Leafs offense lately. And this looks to me more like maybe a more focused, more, you know, just you're just trying to make something happen with some of your bigger players. And that just means juggling. But I don't think this is a bad thing. I know that fans will look at this and they'll start to panic, but I don't think that's a bad thing by any means.
No, I'm a really big fan of Sheldon Keefe's willingness to tinker. Even when things are going well, there's always ways to improve them. Have you noticed anything different about Sheldon Keefe's approach this season? I was just talking about his willingness to tinker, but he seems more animated on the bench. And then, of course, he's definitely giving us some more noteworthy sound bites after games. A lot of people raised their eyebrows at his soft and purposeless comments, which he clarified on Saturday before the game against the Islanders.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that there's a difference so much in Keith in how he's portraying himself as a coach. I think the comments that he made after that Rangers game, I just think it's an example of maybe a little bit of frustration maybe boiling over, in the sense of, you've got this team that's blowing leads again in the third period, that's been a problem for them in the past. And it seems like it's always the same cyclical problems with the Leafs. You know, we talk about the same things every year. Why can't they hold a lead? Why aren't they a better team at X, Y, and Z? And it just feels to me maybe a little bit more like Keith is at that point too, where he's like, why do we keep dealing with the same issues? Why do the same ones keep kind of cropping up? And why does it feel like there's this level that the Leafs could be at, and then they're right there and like they could hit it, but then they're just falling just a little short of it. And it just, there's more there, I think, is what I get from Keith. There's more there that he wants that he doesn't see consistently enough. And so the difference to me, I mean, he's always run a hard practice. I think he really truly does say to the players what he says publicly. And I do think that that makes a difference in kind of how he's perceived, is that at least if you're willing to say it behind closed doors, you know, and you're willing to say it publicly, like, you're just, there's not a miscommunication there. That some coaches might shy away from that because they might say, hey, what we say in the room stays in the room. But Keith, I just think, is honest. I think he understands that there's a lot on the line here for this team. They haven't had the success that they wanted to in the playoffs. They don't want these same bad habits to keep cropping up. And I just think that there's a coach there who's really motivated to not really necessarily always be liked by his players. I don't think he always needs to be guys' best friends. He'd really rather players maybe he's going to go down the bench and tell Austin Matthews, hey, that wasn't good. What you just did. We saw that very animatedly, as you mentioned, on the bench last week. And to me, that's just a coach who is determined to get the most out of his players, whether they like him for it or not, because ultimately winning cures everything. Winning is the best thing. And there are times where I've thought maybe Keith has been a little bit himself, maybe a little bit soft on some of these guys in terms of his analysis or in terms of what he said to us about them. And now it just seems like the tide's turned and he's more willing to say, hey, you know what? We need to be better than what we've been because we have fallen short of our own ability. We have fallen short of expectation. We don't want to keep doing that. So let's really, you know, be willing to hold ourselves accountable and be honest about where we're at. And I think that that's something that if it's permeating in your room, if you have a good team, you have a mentally tough team, they're going to take that lesson and they're going to do some good things with it.
In conversation with Kristen Shelton of ESPN, and you can find her work at ESPN.com. And in your latest piece, Kristen, you put together a midseason report for each team, and you had Justin Hall as your player who needs a bit of a reset here for the Maple Leafs. Why do you think that he's taken such a step back this year after kind of breaking out last season?
It's such a great question, and it's one that I've thought a lot about because I see so much in Hall's game and how it's evolved. Like, I remember covering him his first seasons with the Marlies and seeing the way that he was able to grow through those experiences and then coming up and being scratched and never being a consistent part of the Mike Babcock Leafs and then really getting that chance under Keith and running away with it and being, you know, the exact opposite of a guy who needs a reset. You know, he'd be that guy that has had the terrific first half if we were talking about last year. But it's just, I think it comes down to what he did sustainable. Was it just kind of a flash in the pan? Hey, you know, a guy who hit his prime at the right time had one, you know, really great season. I don't think that's the case for Hall. It's just, I don't necessarily see that same dominant ability that he had playing alongside Muzzin last year, where they had great chemistry. They were able to really read off each other well. They, I just thought, really had a rapport on the ice together where it just didn't look as hard as it has this year. And Hall just seems to be, he's a half step behind. He's maybe thinking too much. It's almost like maybe the pressure of having played as well as he did is catching up to him a little bit in just in terms of his execution and Muzzin as well. I mean, Muzzin, he's had his injuries, right? And he's getting older as well. And that's where, you know, if Hall previously had been really relying on Muzzin, you know, to really support what he was doing. And now Muzzin's been in and out. He's dealing with his own issues. That can be really having an effect on Hall as well. So I think it's a combination of factors. But I do know that when you see Sandin, you see Liljegren, you see what these guys are doing, if you're Justin Hall, you want to be, you know, playing to a level that is above, obviously, where those younger guys are, but you also want to be playing at your best. And it just doesn't feel to me like we're seeing the best of Justin Hall. So maybe that's what's to come here in the second half. He had some time off because of COVID, and maybe you come back, you've had a little bit of a reset, got a bit of a rest here for a long run ahead. And I just think that Hall can really still be a very effective player. It's just, he's got to find that rhythm again, got to find that confidence. And I think when he does that, you're going to see a player that's up to the caliber that we saw last year.
On the flip side of things on the blue line, Kristen, I don't know if it's possible for any player to be underrated in this market, but Morgan Riley is getting a lot of love from John Tavares and Mitch Marner specifically over the weekend about how he's wildly underrated. It's insanity. He's never been to an All-Star game. First off, you've gone from working in this concentrated market to a larger scale look at hockey at ESPN. Do you think he's a little underrated in the league? And he's just having such a great year. Does anything look different about him this season to you, or is it just Morgan Riley at his very best?
Well, you know, it's funny. We think back, not last year, but the year before, where Riley was in the Norris Trophy conversation, having a great year, And I wonder how insulated that is to Toronto, you know, because when you go into the wider scope of hockey and you just see individuals having such great years, whether it's an Aaron Ekblad in Florida, whether it's a Victor Hedman, whether it's, you know, the usual suspects, the Roman Yossis, do we focus on those guys because perennially they're so good? And so Riley kind of flies under the radar outside of Toronto because is he a true number one defenseman? That's always been the question. Is Riley number one, or is he just a number one because Toronto doesn't have another number one, so to speak? And they've worked obviously very hard over the years to find the right partner for Riley. They've tried a lot of different guys. TJ Brody has seemed to be that next best partner for him after Ron Hainsey. And I see Riley as a number one defenseman. I have been a huge, I think, champion of his in this market because I do think he's underrated. I think what he provides and what he has provided on the ice through all the iterations of the Leafs when they've been great offensively, when they have struggled offensively and, you know, been good defensively, struggled defensively, he has always been pretty even keeled in terms of his production. He's always been that guy you could rely on. Even during his, you know, quote unquote bad stretches, he was still so important to what they did defensively. And that's just doesn't, it's just, it's not necessarily as flashy, I think, his game as maybe some of those other guys that are constantly being talked about. And it's maybe why Riley doesn't get the overall attention that he does in Toronto is just, he plays, you know, a meat and potatoes game a lot of the time, but then this year, kind of like we saw 2 years ago, when that offensive output comes through, it really does make just a huge difference, I think, in his overall ability to contribute, his overall game, the confidence you see him play with, the confidence the team has in him. And the other thing is, I think when you play on a team with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander, you maybe that's where a little bit of that underratedness comes from too for Riley, is that the Leafs have been scoring so much that they've been able to outscore a lot of their defensive issues. So maybe you don't notice as much what O'Reilly is doing on the blue line because, hey, they score a lot of goals and that's what everybody talks about. But I do think defensively, we've seen the Leafs without Riley. We know where that goes and we know that he is their best, their brightest. And he's going to be here for many more years. So I think it's a combination of things, but I would say, in my opinion, he is underrated throughout the rest of the league, but that probably does have a lot to do with the other players that are on the ice with him. And I'm sure that he is very happy to be underrated if it means that he's got Matthews and Marner and all those great players around him.
Yeah, 8 mo years to be exact. And like that contract now is looking like a genius, savvy signing by Kyle Dubas. Because when you look at those deals that were signed earlier in the year for about $9.5 million, I mean, now you look at that contract, $7.5 million for this type of production. I mean, that almost seems like a steal at this point, given the defensive market.
Yeah, but you know what? It's funny you say that because I was thinking the other night watching the game, you know, would this be the season Riley was having if the contract was hanging over his head?
You know,
is part of it that you got your business done, you're staying, you know you're staying, this is your team, you got 8 years. Is that the freedom that you kind of see in his game, right? And maybe that's why he was eager to just say, hey, you know what, this is a great contract for me. Maybe I could push it to the end of the year. Maybe I could get more money on the open market, but if it's going to cost me a night's sleep this year, wondering like, oh, I've got to go out and I've got to hit this total, or I've got to play better, or you go through a rough patch and suddenly you're thinking, oh man, I'm hurting myself in the next deal. Why do that to yourself? I think that a part of it is great. I'm locked in. I'm where I want to be. And now you're seeing what a great year he's having. I think the two go hand in hand. So some guys, you know, they want to push for the bigger payday, but that's never really been Riley's MO. You know that this is where he wants to be. He wants to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. And I think a little less on the paycheck for the ability to play well for a team you've invested so much in, that's probably a really good feeling. And I would think a contributing factor in what he's doing on the ice this year.
Yeah, and $7.5 million sheets still ain't bad. Still ain't bad. I don't think he's going to be losing sleep. Yeah, don't think he's going to lose sleep about maybe he could have got more. He should be happy with the payday he's going to receive every July 1st. All right, Kristen, a treat to talk to you as always. Really appreciate it, and we'll do it again soon.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. And if you could hear any of that construction noise that's happening, I do apologize. It was unplanned. So thank you for rolling with that.
No worries. I thought it was we were going to have a LeBron chair incident, and you were going to be like, no, it's drilling of some kind. But we decided to kind of just let it go. I know that all too well from back in my day in the city. Have a good one, Kristen.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
All right. There she goes. Kristen Shilton, ESPN reporter. Go check out her work at ESPN.com. One of the best, and we always love having her on the show. All right. We got to zip here, but coming up next, the Leafies. Who do we think was the best player of the weekend? Who was the most underrated of the weekend? What was the most dynamic play? We'll tell you all of those. Next, I'm Mike DiStefano, a.k.a. Al's brother. She's due to Sherry. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here. Honor. Prestige. A celebration of...
The waitress tripped on the cord.
Presenting... The Leafies, a celebration of Leafness.
What am I going to do with the award? Nothing. That's the least of my concerns right now.
On TSN 1050, the Leafs live here.
It's the Leafies, AB. The highest esteemed award you can get as a Maple Leaf is being named to our weekly Monday Leafies Award. After a fun Saturday night game of hockey on the island. We'll get it started with the Dougie. That one goes to the all-around best player of the game. You could talk about this one first. I feel like I pumped his tires enough when we had Kristen on. You could take a turn.
Yeah, and you talk about this being the most esteemed award you could get. Forget the Norris. You want the Leafy. You want the Dougie. And that's what Morgan Riley is getting from us from this weekend's performance. A goal, a really nice goal, and a really nice setup by William Nylander also. A goal and an assist, played over 25 minutes, very sound defensively, ended up taking on a lot of tough minutes with Muzzin being out, jumped into the rush, and he was really generating a lot of offense early on, too. He was active on both ends of the ice. I thought Morgan Riley, by far the best Maple Leaf Saturday night in the island.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to the Sundin next for the most dynamic play, the play of the game. We're giving this one to Mitch Marner. Ooh, we haven't gotten to pump his tires much at all today, AB, but the Leafs are really at their best when Mitch Marner is at his craftiest and his most confident. And what's his confidence? Like, Kucherov goal shorty, nonetheless. Like, just a gorgeous little tuck for Mitch Marner on the penalty kill, and that was our most dynamic play of the weekend.
Also, really interesting. We asked for people to weigh in on like some rule changes that they would make in the sport of hockey. Somebody actually weighed in, and they said that when you score, I think it was Pablo said this on our Twitter account.
Nice,
when you
Pablo.
Score a shorty, your penalty is over. What I think is interesting. You score a shorthanded goal, that negates the power play.
That's interesting to me.
Yeah. So I wanted to give a shout out there. But yeah, Mitch Marner, that Kucherov goal was, which he said he did on purpose. I don't know, but that's what he says. We'll believe him. If that's the case, definitely the most dynamic play because that was sick.
We didn't get to talk about the Shane Wright goal, but I'm sure he said he did it on purpose too.
Right. you could also make that in terms of hockey. The Vive for the most underrated player of the game, giving this one to my guy. Pierre Engvall. I thought Pierre Engvall was really good. And the fact that he's being dropped to the fourth line kind of stinks, considering it's coming off of one of his better games of his career, probably. But scored the game winner, a first period buzzer beater, made a really nice move to get a shot off with 0.3 seconds left. Ended up being the game-winning goal. He was hard on forechecks all night. Led the team with a 75 Corsi 4 percentage and 82% expected goals for rate, all with just 33% ozone starts. That third line, although they are not contributing much offensively, I thought that they've been outstanding when it comes to generating chances. And I think Pierre Engvall is really starting to come into his own. And hopefully with his speed, he can get Spezza and Simmons going. And that just goes to I think talk about what Kristen was saying about building out depth throughout the lineup. That should help improve that fourth line.
Seabiscuit the horse going to work.
Oh yeah. Seabiscuit the horse. I like it. I like it. All right, JT, we got a jet for today. If you missed any of our show today, you can find it on tsn1050.ca or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano for Drew and Tashari. Listen to Leafs Lunch. We'll catch you back here tomorrow at noon. Gameplay with Matt Cause next.